here we are in June, and almost the end of June. Wait a minute. Because we were looking on the program for April, May, and June, and we're going, there's not much left here because we're almost at the very end. As most all of you that are here know, we do meet twice a week. On Wednesday nights, we have our study class. We are slowly finishing up in the Ocean of Theosophy, so that next Wednesday, it will be a closing off of the idea of the dreams and the apparitions, but next Wednesday, we will be dealing with the dangers that come along with this idea of dreams and apparitions. That meeting starts at 7:45 and it lasts till 9 p.m. And also on Wednesdays, our reference library is open from 5:30 till 7:30, just prior to the meeting. There's always someone there if you need to look up anything special. And usually if there's a reference for the class, that would be a good place to check it out if you don't have the books at home. Then on Sundays, as we sit here now, we start at promptly at 11, and we're over at 12 noon. The doors open at 10:30, and usually it's a form, a panel, or a talk. Today, as you will see, it is a panel. The subject matter for today is inspiring self-reliance and responsibility. Next Sunday is a special meeting on the 22nd. It's ULT Day, and this has to deal with the United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission, and its future. That meeting, we only ask if people could arrive a little earlier and be seated, because it's more of a commemorative, I have trouble with that word, meeting, and we'd like people to be in their seats and collected for that. Also, we wanted to bring up the idea that our pamphlets that come out quarterly, our new one is here now. And this will take us through July, August, and September. They will be available at the usher's table. You might want to pick it up in a little extra notation. July, we will have articles by HPB on self-development. August, there are no Sunday meetings. And then, of course, we pick up in September. The Wednesday nights will be open during the summer, all the way through from July 2nd through September 24th. And, of course, we will be studying the Bhagavad Gita. So that gives us enough as far as the announcements. What we'd like to bring forward with you is the declaration that's on the back of the bulletin. It's just five small paragraphs, but it's five small paragraphs that lets us understand exactly what the ULT is here for, and it's primarily to broadcast the teachings. The doors are open to anyone who wishes to investigate this idea. And so that for most of us, we have a basis, and that basis for union is that aim at similarity, aim, purpose, and teachings. And from our platform, you will only hear theosophical teachings. We don't take part in side issues of the day. We leave that up to every individual, because it is your free choice to do what you wish on that. other points we think that's important that for people to understand is we're really working on to try to understand what that idea of universal brotherhood really is. It is a fact in nature. We have to get to the point where we understand the universality of that. And also that the idea that it's we're an association of students, an association of people who want to know, who ask the questions. And there are no officers, there's no dues, there's no bylaws. Primarily it's like a school. It's a place to come to study. To study what? To study to understand who and what we really are. And it's interesting because if they look at the back of the pamphlet and look at the 28 lodges that are situated throughout the world, it's a very interesting areas that these thinkers are able to go and look at this, some of these ideas, and especially in some of the countries that they're in, it's very interesting. So that gives us an idea of what the ULT is about. So we are going to start with the idea of self-reliance.
Well, if you were here last Sunday, you heard a talk about a well-examined life, and you will hear echoes of those ideas today, because the question is, of course, how do we cultivate self-reliance? And in doing that successfully, we will have a well-examined life. So they go together. So how can anyone expect to acquire wisdom without self-dependence? Each man must progress by his own efforts. Theosophy tells us no matter where we are in our evolution, there is always more to learn. Sometimes we weave in our own views, which perverts the wisdom religion. Even when we are sure of our understanding of a theosophical concept, there is always more to learn. No one gave you knowledge. If you think about it through school and from your parents, no one gave you knowledge. Ideas were presented, but you had to digest and understand them before they became yours. That was an exercise of self-reliance. So where is this truth we seek? We're told all worlds are external to self. The truth must be found in that inner self, which is within each and every one of us. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote a piece called Self-Reliance, and there's a quote that says, "Nothing can bring you peace but yourself. Nothing can bring you peace but the triumph of principles. A man is relieved when he has put his heart into his work and done his best." Now, the operation of law on the physical, psychic, and spiritual planes is identical, but the more pronounced according to where we place the mind, which is usually on the outer and physical. True spiritual independence is the right of each and every one of us. Forgive our voice. All are left free to choose. As above, so below. Evolution takes place as we move and learn throughout lifetimes. A man which desires to eat must chew his own food to acquire the nutrition from it. So too does this apply to the higher nature. It must be sought out by each individual. Why? We think it's most beautifully stated in the voice of the silence. Look within. Thou art Buddha. We grow ever from within outwards, as is the natural law. Everything in the universe proceeded from within outwards. So using self-reliance, we need to turn inward and find that spiritual basis. Self-reliance is freedom from dependence on others. It's liberation from enslaving desires of every kind. Now, this is not an easy task. We're not saying you walk out the door and this can be accomplished. But we are ever working on achieving this, and it allows us not only to help ourselves progress, but to fit ourselves to be the better able to help others. So we thought about reincarnation. Where does all this work go after death? Does it disappear? Is it permanent? What happens to it? Again, from Ralph Emerson. A man should learn to detect and watch that gleam of light which flashes across his mind from within. In every work of genius, we recognize our own rejected thoughts. They come back to us with a certain alienated majesty. Nothing is ever lost. Any work we have done, any recognition of that inner spiritual center, how little, how much stays with us lifetime to lifetime, and we continue to work on it. So how do we recognize it? Where do we find it? From Magazine Theosophy, hold fast to that which has neither substance nor existence. Listen only to the voice which is soundless. Look only on that which is invisible, alike to the inner and to the outer space. Look within. Thou art Buddha.
Now, for someone who has reached that point of self-reliance, this idea of responsibility will come much easier than for someone who hasn't even attempted to have the realization of that self within, that discipline within. So when we come up with this idea of responsibility, we could sort of look at it as a compounding of justice, because with responsibility we have to have accountability. We have to have that obligation. Whoa. Obligation. Okay, wait, let me get this one back in here. That's what we wanted in the first place. Is it on? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Okay. That idea of obligation. And with that also comes discrimination. So this idea of responsibility, it's got to be something that we can rely on. And if we look at the idea that responsibility can be that of by compassionate acts, that the idea that we need to have the right attitude towards every event, every thought, every deed and action that we do. And that would come, as we said, easier to someone who understands what it means to be self-reliant. That takes away all the outside effects that we have used in the past. It's not me, it's my family, it's my environment, it's my friends. It's everything outside affects me and directs me. But this idea of self-reliance, we now can look and think that we ourselves, if we are in a mess, we were the creators of it. There is no outside excuse that we can use. So we start to look at things differently. We might ask ourselves, well, where do we start? Part of it was brought out. What are we supposed to be respectful of? Okay. Well, and where do we find this responsibility? To what? Well, we could start very close at home. What about our body? This is the vehicle that we have created to use to gain knowledge through experience in this lifetime. This vehicle, our body, we have a responsibility to how it is and how it is kept, and in each lifetime, because it has taken lives and lives to develop in any one point. And then within this physical body, what about the other kingdoms? What about the animal, the vegetable, or the mineral kingdom? We know that essence and units are within us. We know that how we react and how we live our life can affect these. So it's not only those who are wiser and grander than we may be, but all those kingdoms below us. We are sort of like the kingpin of trying to help them, the intelligence, the consciousness within them, move up, shall we say, the ladder. So then we can start moving out and say, well, our thoughts, our deeds, and also our fellow man, families, country, every being that exists, we have a responsibility to help on that whole period of evolution by the way we think and act and interact with others. Now, we thought about this idea with responsibility, and within the teachings, we think of the idea of dharma or duty. Where does that come in? What am I doing by trying to have this responsibility and understand all this? Well, for one, we're building a better character for some future lifetime. And the character that we look and see and know is, again, of our own making. Nothing from the outside has made us be the way we are. We have either indulged in things we should have or we should not have. And so we see our character and our understandings as our own making. So with that, we're also having what we would call, we're making karmic stamina. We're giving building blocks for situations that will come that we haven't even thought about in this lifetime. And it also brings up the idea of purity of our thoughts by trying to do good deeds and by right speech. That's very important. We might slip every so often, but try to think before we speak would be a nice situation. And we could fix our daily thoughts on higher ideals, more universal ideas. So we're stretching this whole idea of responsibility, and we're connecting it with, in a way, duty, proper duty, proper place, proper doings. And also, it'll help us to be able to make what we would call moral decisions in the right direction. Particular obligations. And it seems that by being more responsible, we're more accountable for things. It makes life easier. We're a little bit more walking, shall we say, that middle path and trying to look to the left and look to the right. But still, we are the choosers, the deciders. So, as HBB has said, the progress of the ego, which we are, is a series of progressive awakenings. So once we start to awaken to the idea of being a self-reliant person, then coming to the idea of responsibility and that great power of choice, that consciousness that we all have, it would give us more of a self-determination, shall we say, and the needs between the qualities of selfishness and indifference. We'd be able to check them more. And our mind, it says, is the heart, is the knot of the heart. So when you think about it that way, we are thinkers, we are choosers, and we may choose how we wish to develop in this lifetime, develop in future lifetimes by the way we think and act now. And in a way, we're more centered if we can honestly feel that we are more self-reliant on everything that comes to me, every smallest detail, every situation, every individual. I have literally put out the efforts to have those effects come to me in this one lifetime. So that gives us a basic idea of self-reliance and responsibility. Let's see if you have some ideas. Yes.
We know that HPB, we forget where, we think it might have been in a few spaces, spots rather. She talks about how even if you fail, as long as you pick yourself up and keep trying, as was said in one of the talks, we will always learn from that. Hopefully we will learn from that. And that if we keep trying, that effort won't be lost. Even if we fail, as long as we're trying, that effort will stay with us and impress in us.
And make us accountable for it. And eventually it will be automatic. Whatever we've been trying to do, it'll be automatic. We won't have to think about it because we've already done all the work and it takes on its own colorings.
There's the other part of failure, that when you fail, you learn something.
True.
You learn what not to do or what didn't work. So you're really on the way to success.
And in the evolutionary process, you won't have the same brain and the same body and the same desires necessarily in your next lifetime or in future lifetimes. So those little seeds we have planted, when the conditions are right, will bloom. We carry them with us. We may not know at the moment where'd that come from, but at some point we understood a concept or did something good for another, that will have its effect in the future life as well.
That whole concept that the mind is the knot of the heart is really something to dwell on. We could dwell on that for days and days on end. And the more intellectual we are, the more likely we are to tie our mind up in a knot and not let that ray of the divine shine through. So, and also, as was said, we get a new brain and a new body every time. And we've seen those that are the simplest, not necessarily in mind, but just the very simple people, very humble people, they seem to have the biggest hearts. And they don't try to alienate anybody with their intellect.
Mm. Yes.
In the same light, we struggle to understand the ideas that we discuss, but we always pointed to the Bhagavad Gita. Mm. And in that story, it will tell you how you can live your life through the heart. And that this understanding that we're talking about only becomes clearer, because our actions only, everything only exists in the moment. So if it exists in the moment, it's what we do right now that makes us the creator of the universe. So, we keep that in mind. That's responsibility.
And with the capital R, it is. It's a lot. Yes, way in back.
What is the relationship between self and conscience as it applies to self-conscious?
What's the relationship between self and conscience? Can we ask which self you are referring to?
The one true self.
The one true self. The one true self is that which we are trying to reach to and understand. So our conscience is our measure. It's our intuition. It's our sounding board. It's that by which we use the three fundamentals to see if something is fitting properly, or if something has been left out. So it is, the conscience is the method by which we reach up to that self. And the more often we practice using our conscience, the more porous we make that connection. And we listen to that voice of the silence and obey, in a sense.
It doesn't seem to appear that we always create our own circumstances. Take an innocent child that gets murdered. What explanation is there for that?
Well, if we look at the idea that if we're only looking at this one lifetime, we're not going to be able to understand it. The child that gets murdered, a young child, let's say before the age of 7 or 8, how do we not know that that real self within isn't been brought back to be a lesson to someone around them, some connection, whether it be usually in the family? There are no such things as miracles or accidents. Nothing. It might look like an accident because in this lifetime we can't put the building blocks in the right place to see how it happened. But somewhere along the way, something had been put into motion. Again, it says that connection of the child that maybe was murdered can be a large influence and a large lesson to those around that child that had connections. And the true real ego knew about this prior to entering birth, because we all have that preview of what's to come. When we say we don't mean this personality that we look in the mirror and we say, hi, we're looking good today. Not that. We're talking about the real self within. It sees what's to come. And then that veil comes down. That just comes down. And it's forgotten. But that true self knows this is what is to come.
And once that karmic lesson has been accomplished, they say children, particularly under 7, will find the next appropriate vehicle and often come right back in completely different circumstances, but the best for what else is to come. So it's not something we can make sense of on this plane, except to know that everything comes to us under law. What we set forth comes back. Yeah.
Isn't this a theosophical idea of responsibility and self-reliance a bit hard to sell in this society right now, due to the fact that you are born a sinner, someone else pays for those sins, and you can only go to your reward through an outside agency granting you grace? It's not that you won this or achieved this. Someone is giving something outside of yourself, is giving this to you. That seems to be the prevailing thought among Western religions right now. So theosophy is coming from the opposite end. Makes it a bit difficult to sell, right?
Well, we have usually anywhere from 12 to 20 people in this room for a meeting. There's also a church directly across the street that probably has many more folks attending. But there is always a point where we are unsatisfied and we go looking. And no matter where we look, if we are sincere and thoughtful and open to new ideas, we will find our way here.
Going back for a moment to the child being murdered, it doesn't necessarily mean that that individuality murdered someone in previous life.
No.
It could be that they didn't prevent something when they could have, or that they wanted to know what that experience was like. I mean, we can't, no matter what happens to us or anyone else, we can't make a judgment of the past based on that. But we also wanted to say, if you think about the word responsibility, I have the ability to respond always. And if I have responded incorrectly and it's made all these difficulties, I still have the ability to respond correctly. And we think that's the most important thing that theosophy teaches us. You are never condemned. There is no finality. You may suffer and suffer, but you still have the ability to turn around.
And we would think it's usually when we've had to go on through some sort of suffering that we really start to question. We don't question all the beautiful, wonderful, joyous times we have. We sort of just take them for granted. We just don't question. But when it hurts hard. And then that's when we really can't look outside anymore. That's when we start, hopefully, to look within and maybe question, maybe I did something out of the way that brought this to happen. And when they say that idea, look within, thou art Buddha, that again is another heavy statement. For most of us, we never thought of anything like that. If we came from a religious background, we were created. But then that's could have been that idea, the beginning of everything for the outside. Once we come to this idea that I am the creator, and even though in this lifetime there might be situations that come to me in all types, that I have no idea of what this is all about, we can say to ourselves, why what have I done? It doesn't usually come that way. It's usually, why is this happening to me? Whereas if we look at, is there something to learn in this situation? Mostly if life is, as they say, is a school, it's a school of living, of life, and what life's all about, then maybe it has deeper meaning for us to look at it this way. You are what you eat. You've heard that statement. Well, you are what you think. That's what they tell us. You are what you think. So the way I think and the way you think, if it doesn't match, that's not my problem. My problem is, am I thinking the way I should be thinking? Where is that balance?
And, you know, in any situation, whatever happens may not necessarily be the karma of the one it's happening to. It may be the karmic lesson, as was said, for everyone around them. It's especially different with children involved. But we're thinking more of adults who, these days, there's so much illness. But it gives the opportunity then for children and parents and aunts and uncles to do what they can to be of service to the one who's suffering. That may be the lesson that is learned by all those people. And as was said, the one who was doing the suffering took that on willingly. So we can look at it that way too.
Don't we really have to give up our attachment to all this? Even pain and suffering we become attached to. And we have, it has some significance, that is this, it's that. How do we renounce all of this and still be here in this world and working for the betterment of humanity?
Well, we hear that self-reliance is freedom from dependence on others, to start with. And also liberation from enslaving desires of every kind. Those are all ours. We gave them power, we gave them magnetism to bring them back and be attached to them as a tendency. So it has to be done by the one it needs to be done by. What was your original question?
I think you got. But it. Let's say this: if we could learn how to really detach ourselves, the burdens on our shoulders that we carry around every day will disappear. If we look at each thing as a step, well, it would be easier to step forward than to start stepping backwards. Even if you had your eyes closed, it's easier to step forward without stepping backwards. So the whole idea of it can make life a lot easier if we don't make everything such a critical thing in our life. Either we learn from it, and if we don't, for sure, it'll come back. Maybe not exactly the same, but it'll come back and we'll have another chance. So the idea that we are choosers and we can choose how we wish to live, that's a very important responsibility to hold on to. How are we going to live? How do we choose to live? That's an important statement in our life. Yes, way in the back.
We've heard
you're not back.
A poetic part. Sentence here. It says that of teachers there are many. The master soul is one. And when we talk about self, how do we distinguish between our personal and individual myself of Paul, and upon which do we depend? Upon which do we look to in tight situations?
We would think the individual self of all is that which can recognize the all capital S's self, the self of all. There's the self of all, the individual expression of that, and the personal expression of that. So if we are bound by desire, by action, by responsibility to the personal, we have a ways to go. But then we begin to recognize the individual self, that there's something going on here that is unlike anything in this outer world. And we begin to look within and see it. Once we are able to acquire a complete understanding of who and what that is the link to the self of all. And that is the journey for each and every one of us. No matter what the condition, as was said earlier, it is possible for each and every one of us. It's our right, it's our will to choose to do that.
And way in the back.
The process that you're both describing seems to be one of no rush, no immediacy. And it seems to be anything but punitive. Am I right in hearing that?
Yes. And if you look at it this way, if we have been incarnating over 18 million years, it seems we've had to been through the same thing over and over and over again. And look where we are today. And if we take the story of Arjuna from the Gita, which is 5,000 years old, do you think we've changed much? Are we not going through that battle constantly? Are we not Arjuna trying to understand what's going on and then having an awakening where we start to have a conversation with ourselves? And it takes a long time to develop. It's not an overnight thing. It isn't a one lifetime thing. And we get all hung up in side issues so many times. So the idea that we're not on any time schedule, but if we really and truly want to be altruistic on a larger, grander scale than just the close at hand, the family, our friends that we have to try to push a little harder to expand so we can be a help to someone else, be an example to someone else. We're not saying we're looking to be saints and walking around, but we're just looking to try to develop this idea of being more a help to others. It really takes a lot of burden off ourselves. And as we said, there's no time clock here.
As far as punitive, though, anything we create in any lifetime will be back in a future lifetime. So we may not call that punitive, but it is the results, the tendencies, the qualities that we have created that will find us again. So the question is, what is the responsibility? How are we using this self-reliance, knowing that it will be there for us in the future?
Yes. How could we foster a desire in others to become self-reliant. We meet many people who are willing to just rely on others, and they don't seem to want to take responsibility for themselves. But how can we make it so they desire to want to take responsibility for themselves? Is there any method? Any good method? Other than being an example? I mean,
right, but an example, for some people, you know, they have manuals out. They have every package that you open that you have to put something together. There's page after page after page. Show me how to put this together. There's something about seeing it done rather than going through page after page of manuals reading about it. People do pick up how other people act, because we all know, think back, if it wasn't a school teacher, someone that impressed us so strongly that we just admired them in so many ways, and we saw that they were so bright and so easygoing. We did acknowledge we saw this, and we can all remember someone like that, maybe more than one person. And sometimes that would maybe, gosh, I wish I could be like that person who'd be able to go through situations and don't go too high or too low, but is going through them. So we sometimes think seeing it is very important. Take a hand.
Okay. There are natures, though, that you have to tell them you can't do it. And the minute you tell them they can't do something, then they try it themselves. So you have to know the person you're dealing with and what's really going to prompt them, whether an example will do it or they'll just hang on your coattails.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We just watched a movie that was excellent, in as much as teaching someone to learn self-reliance and responsibility. The title was Dallas Buyers Club. A individual who lived for pleasure contacted AIDS, and it became the best thing that ever happened to him. He took on responsibility for what had happened to him, and not only that, he took on the responsibility of helping others. In doing so, the pressure that was on his shoulder was lifted. He was given 30 days to live. He ended up living, I think, 3 years.
Mm.
And within that time, he came up with a lot of help to other individuals so afflicted. But the idea that the best thing that could have happened to someone is that they get AIDS just astounds the mind. But that's often how things work. Those things that we think are the worst things that could ever come our way often make us better people.
Hmm. Do you want to call on anybody? Sure. Okay.
I'd use an hour myself, but I'm going to try to be quick. Having a sense of humor about it, you said the only way that that man can achieve knowledge if he chooses on food or something like that. What I believe is happening is you have theosophy and science and legality all at the racetrack trying to outrun itself. Now, if you give someone a saline pack, then they no longer have to eat. Now, I'm going to move on to Plato and Socrates' dissertation on self, which is we, meaning us, but not them, possibly you, but I'm going to move on to I. So at what point is the self-examined life determined to be the best? Well, I was a man when I had enough money to buy my own comic books. My mother's self did not judge me to be a man until I was 18 and graduated from high school, and she put me out. So it was herself who determined that I, myself, was a man. So when you dance around that circle and you come to the child that gets murdered outside, was it the child's responsibility because they were too young to walk, but they were held and someone carried them out and they shot them? So at what point does karma and morality meet, and at what point does morality and legality cross? I mean, you know, it may be legal to do certain things, but it's not morally correct. And it may not be morally correct to actually do something, but as they say, what's the saying? Karma comes back and kicks you in the ass or something like that.
Well, interesting questions. Okay. First is, this is a universe of law. That's what we are told. And in my talk, it talked about on the physical plane, psychic plane, and spiritual plane, which we are. The operation of law is identical, except more according to where we place the mind, the desires. But the important point being that it's a universe of law. So as above, so below, if we take that which I have done altruistically will have its effect. That which I have done to hurt another will have its effect. The legality of it, we don't even need to talk about it because it's a universe of law. It's cause and effect, which is karma. So they're really all interblended, and we can't know in this lifetime what led up to the circumstances that we're facing now. What we can know is, as was mentioned about duty, if they come to us, then it is our duty to deal with them. Do you want to follow
up? When you say as above and below, I think that's a carryover from the Duat, which is the way the Egyptians used to record history. Everything that was mapped in the heavens, they recreated on Earth. And what I think they are referring to, Plato, this is my personal opinion, which I'm here to learn from everyone and put forth some opinions. Plato or Socrates wrote, when the Egyptians first ascended on the shore of the Nile, there was a great cat protruding from the sand, which means the Egyptians were not originally from Egypt, the original Egyptians. The term human is an Egyptian term. They didn't believe that the people around them, they thought they were savage and not actually human, so they coined the term human to separate themselves from those that were around them.
It's interesting, but it's for another day.
Okay.
Because we could talk a lot about it,
okay,
for sure. Yes?
It was said earlier about the big self and then the rest of the selves, all of us. When people have these near-death experiences, they always talk about coming to the light and that this light is all-knowing, infinite, I mean, all everything, you know, and full of love. Now, but that's separate, but it's actually us, we merge into the light. Is that what you all are saying?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
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 Your own light.
And that light is with us all the time. A man should learn to detect and watch that gleam of light which flashes across his mind from within. Occasionally we have the aha moment. That is that inner spiritual being reaching through to the personal man, or vice versa. But there's a realization of something important. And those aha moments should be written down because they are gifts, in a sense, where you have reached to what you're searching for.
Way in the back.
So, are you saying there's an analogy. It's almost as though there were a spiritual sun, and each of us is a ray of that one essence, one sun. But sometimes the clouds get in the way.
Yes, it's a great analogy, and the sun's rays shine on everyone. They don't decide who will get the light. And when the clouds come, it's time for work. It's always time for work. One more quick.
Well, it seems it's very difficult for us to get out of ourselves to understand the term self-reliance. But it's also my understanding that in these rooms, the three fundamental propositions based on the three fundamental principles is where we begin. And then descend, and then go back again, and we get some idea of getting over ourselves and and begin to understand the relationship between all the lives on earth.
Yes.
Those fundamental principles are the key.
Absolutely, and you will hear them on Wednesday, we believe.
Yes.
Just that. Was the sentence before that about making the clouds go away? HPV is wonderful. There are people who can color a day so much that they remove the clouds from the people around us. We could each try to be that a little bit of each day.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of both of our favorite quotes from Magazine Theosophy, something to think about as we leave. What am I? I am a fragment of the all-pervading deity, entombed in the flesh and working out through slow and painful progress its evolution towards liberation and reunion. Why do I work? I work to reach the home from which I started, the pure state of unconditioned being, the richer for having fulfilled my mission in the Vale of Tears. How do I work? I work by striving to allow neither good nor evil fortune to disturb the perfect serenity of my soul. By detachment from all earthly desires, by keeping the ultimate goal steadfastly in view, by doing good to all sentient creatures, and so extending this sympathy and pity for all that endures life, and by using every earthly act that has to be performed as an act of sacrifice and devotion to the deity within. Go spread some joy. Meeting adjourned.